What is going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had a chance to hang out with Brett of the Glorious Sons over Zoom video. Brett was born and raised in Kingston in Ontario and talks about how he got into music, through his older brother, Jay, who is also in the Glorious Sons. Jay is 7 years older than Brett, so it's cool to kind of hear how cool of an older brother Jay was to Brett growing up. Jay started playing guitar at an early age, was in a bunch of bands, and Brett looked up to him, eventually started to learn guitar as well, and then joined his first band at 15. He was in a punk band, and ironically, the punk band kicked him out because they said he couldn't sing. So he said he went home and for an entire winter just sat in his room, played guitar, and learned how to sing. We hear about the other bands that Jay and Brett were in prior to the Glorious Sons forming. We hear about the success of the band, the major success of their very first single, Mama, and how that got them on Canadian radio. Brett talks about the three previous albums, The Union, Young Beauties and Fools, and A War on Everything. And we dive deep into the new album, Glory, which Brett talks about being a very, very hard record to write. I guess there was three full albums that they had written before they settled on the songs that are on Glory. So it's a really interesting conversation. You can watch the video of the interview with Brett on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be amazing if you subscribe to our channel. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, it would be amazing if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with the Glorious Sons. What's going on, everyone? It is Adam from Bringing It Backwards. I'm so excited to talk to you all about this brand new sponsor that we have, Bespoke Post. It's finally springtime. Love the spring here in Nashville. The leaves are changing and it's warming up a bit. But this spring, I have for you the best box you'll open up all month long. It's from Bespoke Post and their new seasonal lineup of must-have box of awesome collections. I just got my very first box of awesome. Came in a beautiful packaging. I opened it up. I had no idea what was in the box of awesome, which I love. Love the surprise factor to the box of awesome. It's like getting a present and you shake it. You have no idea what's inside. It's like having a birthday every single month with box of awesome. Opened it up and had this amazing canvas line of trade tote bag. I mean, it's got leather straps on it, a metal top where the tote bag closes, buckles to hold it all together, and a bigger leather strap, easy to carry. But I love the belt buckles that hold it all together. I can throw my laptop, my podcast gear, microphone, Zoom recorder right in the bag, and I don't have to worry about anyone trying to open it up or, you know, steal my stuff. But this is honestly one of the nicest, if not the nicest, tote bag I've ever seen. It's got a huge pocket inside. I love the message that Line of Trade has on here too. It says, this one's for the off-duty explorer, the weekend warrior, the get-up-and-go traveler who doesn't take the day for granted because life's short and there's so much out there to see. Here's to the weekend. Definitely the explorer bag here. You can throw all of your necessities in here. And like I said, it's a very durable canvas with leather handles and leather buckles on here, like belt buckle straps, which is really, really amazing. I was really excited when I opened my box of awesome and they knew exactly what I needed. I needed a new bag. My backpack was all torn to shreds. I needed something to carry my stuff, my laptop, my podcast gear. Box of Awesome knows what you need because you take a quiz. Whether you want to drink or eat something more awesome, dress and travel more awesome, or explore more awesome, Box of Awesome has you covered this spring. Like I said, you head over to boxofawesome.com and you take their quiz. It's super easy to get started. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. I took the quiz. They knew I needed a new satchel of sorts, a new backpack, and they sent me this amazing bag from Line of Trade. It's free to join, and they release new items every month across a ton of different categories. When you become a member, you'll have access to stellar discounts across a plethora of products. We're talking about 30% off or more sometimes from these amazing brands. Plus, with each box of awesome, you're supporting small businesses, because 90% of everything that comes in your box of awesome is from a small up-and-coming brand. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. You head over to boxofawesome.com, take that quiz. It just takes a minute, and your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome just for you. Caters just to you. And right now, for the Bringing It Backwards listeners, they've hooked us up huge. You get a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and you enter the code BIBTV at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code BIBTV at checkout for a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment. Boxofawesome.com, code BIBTV. Hey, what's up, Brett? How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Good, my headphones aren't working. Yeah, I can hear you.
Sweet. Well, this is about you and your journey in music, and we'll talk about the new album you guys just put out and the tour you guys are currently on.
Cool.
I did see, I think you guys just posted on Instagram that you're in North Carolina. That looks like the similar parking lot to where you just posted the picture.
Yeah. I'm literally right in the same spot.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, I'm in Nashville and I saw you guys were here last night.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was really fun. Oh, it was really fun. Awesome. Yeah, it was kind of one of those shows that really isn't perfect, but just kind of you have to like shoulder into the mayhem of the moment, and it kind of makes it even more fun because of it.
Oh, that's so cool. You played at the Basement East?
Yeah.
My it's funny that you said that, because my friend's band played there and they're having like, for the first three songs, they had like all these technical issues on their tour. Maybe it's something with, I don't know. I don't want to talk bad on the venue. Maybe it's just like something that happened.
It wasn't the venue's. I could safely say it was not the venue's fault on this one.
Yeah, it was for them too. It was like the guy's amp just kept cutting out and it was something for on him, but it was just funny that it was the same venue. Cool. So first off, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Kingston, Ontario, and we were raised about 20 minutes outside Kingston in Amherstview and then in Odessa. So like Amherstview is like a little suburb, basically, of Kingston. I'd say it's actually more like 10 minutes. And then we moved to Odessa when I got to grade three, and that was in the country, and that's where I lived pretty much until I left.
Okay. So that, you said that's more of a country. Not, is it fairly close to Kingston or not really at all?
Yeah. It's like, that's like 20 minutes.
Okay. So that's like the city that's the closest to you, or would have been the closest to you. Cool.
Yeah.
As far as music, did you grow up in a musical household? Do you come from like an artistic household at all? Or how did you kind of get involved?
My parents were not artistic whatsoever. Like they'd like roll their eyes hearing that right now. And my dad always said that the reason that I can sing is because he used to like do some dance in like a school play. I'm like, dude, you're crazy. But my brother Jay like fell in love and got obsessed with music from an early age, and we were really close. So he kind of lit that fire in me from a very early age. So it was me and Jay were the music ones kind of right from the start. So it probably means that our kids will be much better musicians than us, because we didn't really have anything in the bloodlines. We're like probably the first.
Wow. You said Jay's older or younger than you?
He's 7 years older than me.
Oh, but, okay.
He was like the best big brother that you could ever have growing up. Like just he used to kind of like just let me hang out with his friends and, you know, let me be my crazy emotional self. And they would all laugh at me and I'd sip their beers and like run around to AC/DC and just like, it basically like be having somebody on cocaine at the party, but it's like a 10-year-old kid who's completely sober.
Oh, that is so funny. I have an older son who's, and my youngest one are 8 years apart. And like,
Yeah.
It's cool to hear that you guys were so close, because right now they're just like, you know, butting heads, and the older one doesn't want the younger one around, and he just wants to annoy the older one. So that's funny to hear that you guys, at least Jay was so, inclusive to you.
He was a really good brother. Like, pretty much, you know, I pretty much like looked up to him my whole life, you know, and now we're in a band together, and you know, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
We dreamed of this, like, you know, for a long time.
Yeah. That's so special. Like, as far as like an instrument goes, did he pick up guitar or anything? And then you kind of followed suit, or how did that work? Okay.
So he played the guitar from an early age. And, I think he hated his music teacher, to be honest. maybe he didn't hate him, but the teacher just kind of like taught him, like, you know, live. What's that song called by Beethoven? Like, on the guitar.
Oh, he was just like
drink milk, love life.
Yeah, got it. Okay. And so he wasn't cheating him AC/DC, it sounds like.
Yeah. And all his friends were like learning all these sweet songs. And Jay was like,
he's like, check out this. Anyway, and he starts playing some classical guitar piece.
Yeah. And like, not really, like, I don't think he really taught him like anything like classical, really. It was just like the bare bones crap. But anyways, so I was always like hanging out with his bands and just singing. Like, they would like get me up to like sing a song if they were playing like a crappier show, or like a show at, say, my parents' like backyard or something. Mm-hmm. So I would jump up and sing with them. But I really didn't get into music till I was about 15, like seriously. And that was because I got asked to join like a punk band in high school. And they ended up kicking me out because I couldn't sing. But they... They wanted me in the band because I was crazy. But then they realized I was such a bad singer that they couldn't have me in the band. So then what happened was I went home and I started picking up Jay's guitar, and I literally sang like every single night, pretty much that whole winter, like until my voice started to sound good to me. So like, it was like a real process of like elimination and just learning. And then I started a band, and, you know, we started opening for Jay's band, and, it's kind of one thing led to another. And Jay was working construction, and we started a band called the Stone Ponies. And then I went to school for a bit, and then he called me home because I really hated literature, like going to school for literature, to be honest. Okay. And I came home and they had this band started, and I was like, holy shit, like, they're actually fucking good. Like they were like unique and cool and good. And I shot my shot, and here we are.
Wow, that's incredible. So you took off, went to where, university or something, and then he called you and said, hey, we got this band going, you should come back, and you joined up, and then eventually that became the Glory Sons?
Yeah, they would get drunk at band practice and call me and be like, yo, man, come on, come join the band. And I'd be like, fuck off, guys. I'm trying to do something myself out here. And finally, like, shit got bad enough for me out east where really I called Jay and I was like, man, can I come home and work for you? And can I join the band? And he was like, yeah, come on.
Wow. And then, so were you working construction with him while the band started?
Yeah. Yeah. Me and the other, our other bandmate, Andrew, were working construction with him. And, that's what we, did for 2 years. We played as many shows around Kingston, Toronto, and Ottawa, and did construction during the day.
Wow. And then with your first, I mean, when you put out Mama, that was like the first like official release you had, or because it came on that first EP, and then that's the one that made it on the radio and everything, right? As an independent band?
Yeah. So that was our first EP, Shapeless Art. And I'm just changing locations here for a sec to about that. I didn't I didn't notice. I got one. Sorry about that.
Oh, all good.
So Shapeless Art was son of a bitch. Okay, there we go. Shapeless Art was our first EP, and Mama was our first song that we released to the public, and it was produced by one of Jay's heroes, actually, John Angus McDonald, who was a guitarist for a band called The Trues. Okay. So it was like this whole 360 moment, and yeah, we shot a video for like, I think like $100, and it got to like number 6 on Canadian radio, and it was like, what the hell is going on right now? Like, we couldn't believe it. Like, we were very green at the time, and I think really the charm of us wasn't that our live shows were great or perfect or anything, but you know, we kind of just dove head first into playing, and it was always really fun. And that was, I think, the thing that really attracted people and kept them on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to have that success, I mean, right away in being an independent band, I'm sure that drew attention from a lot of people, like record labels. All these people are probably like, hey, you know, what do you, you know, this independent band is doing all of this. That must have, was that overwhelming, or were you all just really excited? Like, wow, like this is happening.
It was not overwhelming. Like, we didn't feel scared at all. There was like a real bullishness to us, like from a very early standpoint. Like, we were pretty cocky. We would have told you, like, even though it wasn't true, we would have told you we were the best live show in the world. We were prepared mentally for everything, I think, like in the sense that we believed in ourselves very much. But we really didn't get a lot of offers. I think we got like 2 or 3. I think a lot of people thought Mama was a complete flash in the pan and kind of thought we were just a baby band. Like, you know, I know that because I've heard the conversations like people had with our managers later. Like, people really didn't expect us to be much.
They thought maybe it was just like a one-hit wonder kind of fluke deal.
Yeah, well, and if you listen to like the nature of the song Mama, like, it's not like a musical masterpiece. It's 4 chords and it's just like a fun song. And I think like people get scared of that. They think like, you know, what the hell even is this? But to us, it's just like a fun rock and roll song, you know, like we never thought about it. Like, that's, I think, was maybe our strong suit, is we didn't think about a sound or any of that. It was just like, whatever's coming out, you know, like if your hair stands up on your arms, if it makes you excited, you know, it's sweet. And right. I think we really kind of followed that path, you know, early on, and it really, really helped us.
When you went to the union, to that first album, did you feel like you approach that differently now that, you know, you had success with Mama, and then going, was it just the same thing? We're just going to do the same thing. It worked the first time.
Exact same thing, really. Like, exact same thing. It was just about like a feeling. Like, there was like, you know, like when we started and John Angus asked us to produce our album, we didn't even know what a producer was. Like, we didn't think of music in like this like highbrow, like snooty terms, and we still don't really. Like, it was just like, if it sticks, if it's fun, it's sweet. And like, Andrew would play something or Jay would play something, and it's like, let's build a song around that riff. Or, you know, maybe I'd come with, you know, Ruby, the piano part, which was actually on the EP, and it was just like, that's sweet, let's do that. And it was just, it was really just all about fun. And now that I'm saying that, you know, it's a lesson, I think, for being in a band. Like, we're 13 years in, I'd say it's something to keep in mind about how magic happens. I think that really plays a big part in it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you guys, that's how you've continued the band, right? Or continued to go forth into all the albums, would be Is this sound good? Is this fun?
It was, it's gotten, I think, you know, to be honest, a little more thoughtful, like, especially with this last album. But, you know, same with Young Beauties, you know, a lot of this stuff, I feel like kind of happens. I don't want to call them accidents, but you come across, I think, really great things by accident in the end. It takes a lot of hard work and a lot of let's just say draining of the shit. You know, there's so much, you know, crap that you write and stuff like that. And when the stakes get a little higher, it does feel a little more pressure filled. Mm-hmm. But I think that even for the most part on this album, you know, even though there was this really hard time trying to find out what we were trying to write about, even the songs that came out, I think usually happened in a way by accident. Like, you know, as songs generally do, I don't really think, like, I don't sit down and write a song and think I want to write about this. No, it's like,
oh, okay.
What am I feeling right now? And how do I get that out of me, you know, so I can pass it, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. With this new album, were these songs, I mean, just based off some interviews I've read of yours and about this, the new album, is, did you write a lot of it during like COVID, or was it just like a result of that, or like kind of like the pandemic? From what I remember you saying, had some tie to like isolation and those feelings.
Yeah. Well, I wrote like so much, like I would say I wrote too much. If you can kind of say that, like, it's like a, you know, when you're smashing your head off of a wall, like over and over again, just mm-hmm. trying to get out what you're feeling and trying to make magic. And we tried to record this album, you know, with different songs and different things. We tried four times before it actually stuck.
No way. Like four cycles of completely different songs?
Yeah, there's, I think, over 40 recordings, like, kicking around. And I kid you not, there's 18,000 voice notes on my phone right now, and 16,000 of them are from just this last 4 years, because I lost everything else. They're on old phones that are just sitting in my closet. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was just to be honest, it was very hard, this one, like very, very, very challenging. It seemed like every process was either snake bitten or something like that. And I think early on when we started to try to record, we didn't really go in with a true north. I really didn't have songs that meant anything to me. And that was one of the biggest problems.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to write during COVID, getting off, you know, a spaceship basically, and get settling back down into basically domesticated life was just really shocking, I think. More shocking mm-hmm. than I could have explained at the time. So that happened, and then, you know, there was just a bunch of other shit that it was tough.
Yeah. I mean, to have 18,000 voice memo or voice notes, I mean, you're obviously, your brain was cranking, like, and going, like, you're like, oh, this is good, or this is an idea, to have that many, right? I mean, for over 4 years, like, oh, okay, here's the, I have this idea, blah blah blah. But then to sift through that and really, like you said, you find your North Star, like, what are we gonna say here? Like, at what moment did you find that out? Like, or was there a song that came together and you're like, this is what we need to look, this is where we're gonna go towards?
So it was never about sifting through. Like, there's no point in me sifting through anything, because it wouldn't, you know, do anything for me. Like, it's too, I'm also
too fucking many.
Yeah, and I'm terrible at labeling and shit. It's just, you know when there's magic, I think, mm-hmm. and you know because something hangs around in your brain for long enough. Like,
okay.
Yeah, there's there's just certain songs or lines or things that you just never forget. They just seem to stick around and mean more to you, or maybe they're catchy, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. The North Star actually happened like very early on. I never accepted it. And that was Speed of Light. Speed of Light. I wrote that on a piano, in Hamilton after like just walking around. And I originally thought like, okay, this is a little bit, you know, too Brett for the band in a way. So I was going to do it as a solo album. And I just kind of kept that song and a couple of others like off to the side. And we kept writing. And then I was hanging out with John Angus of all people. And he was like, dude, why don't you take those fucking songs and make them band songs? And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. And it clicked in my brain, like, you know, and this is a learning experience for me. This is the only thing that ever really like paid me or actually made music like real for me. So to hoard songs on the side is just, it was a dumb moment. And that I think led to a lot of confusion that I didn't, that I needed to kind of untangle, because, you know, I don't think I thought this band could be anything in that moment, but I think we've proven every record that we can be anything.
And I was going to say, yeah. And a track record,
I think that's
that
kind of like the charm to who we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, Speed of Light hung around. And then, you know, about, I guess after like 2 years, I started kind of like honing in on just these, I was alone in my house, just these very personal kind of like stream of consciousness, kind of like, dare I say like metaphorical, I don't really know in a way, but just kind of like these things that I had to kind of pull from my stomach that, you know, I had no outside things to write about. I had to kind of just go inside and pull them from myself. So that's what happened with this album. And, it got easier and easier once I started accepting, I guess, that.
Yeah, I mean, you had to be it's a very vulnerable record. I mean, to go in, and like you said, if you're sitting in isolation, if you're in, you know, the pandemic or whatever, you're not living and not being able to be like, oh, like kind of pulling experiences from being social. It's all about, you had to really deep, you know, dig into yourself to be like, okay, let's pull these feelings out. And then to be able to then to have the courage to present those and then put them onto an album or into songs. That's another, I'm sure, another step that you had to jump.
Yeah, it was that it was like, you should have heard the albums that we tried before. They were exact opposite. Like, it's crazy. Uh-huh. That like,
yeah, like the three other ones or whatever you said you guys did.
Yeah, like nihilistic to the bone, you know, like. One of them like was like the very first one that we tried with Fred. I was in a dance club in Germany and I was like, fuck, we gotta fucking play on this a little bit. And you know, I still love some of those songs, but I didn't think that they were a great representation of like what our next step should be. And uh-huh. And I think I had a lot of change and growth to go through to be able to even get this stuff out of me. So I'm glad it kind of happened that way, but it was interesting, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Well, did any of the songs from those three, you know, prior, I guess, albums that you had done make this record, or are they all?
Yeah.
New? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, none of them made this record. No. We released them just as one-offs, like not all of them, but
a few of
four
them.
Of them.
Okay.
Four of them, I think. But no, none of them made this record.
Okay. That's interesting. And then because I did see, I think you, one of the songs you had put out kind of during that time period, you did, it was all self-produced and done by you, right? Or you guys?
Yeah, it was done by, me and Coster, like, and Jay mainly. So, okay. And, like, that was another friggin' learning experience. It just, like, we quickly kind of realized, well, we didn't quickly realize, it took us quite a long time to realize it, but we need an adult in the room.
We need an adult in the room.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I think the album's awesome. You guys have continually done such amazing records. And the last two albums you've put out, you've won Juno Awards for. I mean, let's just hope we do three in a row. I mean, that would be incredible. Imagine, right?
I actually think we're going to have trouble winning a Juno this year. I think that my ex-girlfriend's going to win the Juno. She's got like one of the biggest songs in North America. So I think we'll have trouble, but I don't care. Like it's nice to, you know, win sometimes, but I'm like, this album is my happiest I think I've ever been after a recording experience. Like just for all this shit that we went through, and I can still put on every song and be proud of them, and that's not the same for every album we made. And I think that this one really kind of also shows again that we can do pretty much anything. Like we can, and our fans are gonna like it as long as it's from the heart and, you know, it's honest. And I think we got there in the end.
100%. Well, thank you so much for taking time, Brett, to do this. I know that you're in the midst of a tour and you finally have a day off and then I'm bothering you. So I appreciate you taking time to chat with me today. I have a last question for you. You answered it in the middle of the interview, but I'm going to ask it again because maybe you'll say something different or add to it. Who knows? But I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists. You kind of said that you need to have fun, but maybe take it from there. I don't know.
I mean, I really feel like I've made like most of the mistakes in the book of being an artist. And, you know, I've also done a lot of good things too with it. But I would say, like, want to do it mainly though, is just fall in love with the work. Like, because I never have like a, it doesn't really matter to me. Like I can do this for 50 years because I love to write songs. It's not because I'm trying to get to some like destination or anything. And for us as a band, like we just kind of like love to play and we love to write. And I think that it kind of, that's what gives you longevity. And I think that shines through in your music. And I would just say, like, if you're going to do it, don't do it for any other reason other than do it because you love the work. That's the main thing.